So Husky files, gets a, Chrysalis is a company owned by Ritz, and Chrysalis incurs a debt of about $168,000 from Husky Electronics. Husky Electronics then, the debt doesn't get paid, so then Chrysalis, the Ritz, the owner of Chrysalis, starts transferring assets out of Chrysalis to companies that Ritz individually owned or had interests in. Husky files a lawsuit. The debt never gets paid from Chrysalis to Husky. So Chrysalis files a lawsuit and seeks recovery of this money. They sue Ritz individually, seeking to hold him personally responsible for the $164,000. Now, keep this in the back of your mind. The debtor's representative, Ritz, caused Chrysalis, a company he owned, to transfer over $1 million to companies he had interests in. He could have easily paid this debt. I don't know why this came about, and I don't know all the background, but this is kind of counterintuitive to me. But if you think about it, this is what happened. So Husky goes after Ritz individually and says, under Tufta, you're responsible for the debt of your company to me. Right, the transferee. So Judge Boehm decides in Husky, well, no, because in order to be held individually responsible, you have to have an actual a representation to the creditor when the debt was incurred in order to be responsible under Tufta and also under 523. So there was no misrepresentation. It was company to company, not the representative to the company. So there's no individual liability under Tufta. Debt's discharged. Goes up to district court. District court says, well, yes, but I disagree that the creditor could not pursue Ritz under Tufta. I believe there could be some liability there if they pursued the individual under Tufta. However, I also agree, though, however, with the bankruptcy court that it doesn't meet the requirements of actual fraud because there was no actual misrepresentation to the creditor when the debt was incurred, so therefore it's dischargeable under 523. Goes up to the Fifth Circuit. Fifth Circuit says, well, I agree with the district court that there could be some liability under Tufta. I also agree that it's dischargeable because there's no misrepresentation. However, the district court erred because the district court found that the bankruptcy court actually made some findings under Tufta, under the badges of fraud, that could attach the liability individually to Mr. Ritz. So therefore, I'm still going to affirm. Fifth Circuit affirms, debt's dischargeable. Goes up to Supreme Court. Supreme Court says, no, you're all wrong. I mean, what has to happen here is Tufta, if you can find the badges of fraud, enough liability in the badges of fraud, you can pin the liability on the individual under Tufta. And it's not dischargeable in 523A because it's actual fraud. Because in these types of situations, you're never going to find a misrepresentation under that meaning, because when a misrepresentation has to occur initially under actual fraud, but under false pretenses, false misrepresentation. But under actual fraud, those can cover fraudulent transfers, like in this case here. You don't have to have an actual misrepresentation because you're never going to see it. You're going to find it under Tufta, under the badges of fraud, and that's where it's going to come out. And if you find that, then you can pin the liability individually on Mr. Ritz. So they remanded back to the Fifth Circuit. Fifth Circuit said, yeah, we sort of got it right, we sort of got it wrong. We knew that there was something here that the debtor could be held liable under Tufta. We just didn't feel the district court got it right. And because the bankruptcy court didn't really actually make those findings under Tufta, so we're gonna remand it back. Goes back to the bankruptcy court. Judge Boehm goes through a very thorough analysis, like he always does, and he goes through the badges of fraud. And he said, look, there's 5 out of 6 here present, and there's actually more. And so under this theory, under Tufta, and now the Supreme Court has proclaim that if I find these badges of fraud, I can hold Mr. Ritz liable for the debt, the transferee liable for the debt of the transfers, because the debt was incurred as a cause of the fraudulent transfers that left Chrysalis. And that was the end of that. And that's where that ended up. So you have that actual fraud now could be found if you can, on the transferee, not the transferor, the transferee, because there's no actual debt here that was actually misrepresented at the outset, but you can find actual fraud under the Tufta liability. So that kind of gets us to that was the Husky case, and I've got some of this in your materials, but I want to kind of skip ahead, and it's kind of summarized there for you. I want to talk about a few other cases that kind of talk about this, and then I'm going to turn over here to my co-panelist, Christy, and she's going to talk about what we can do to kind of avoid these problems in your practice. So in the Sullenberg case, this is another example, and this is just kind of good reading for you. I just want to point this out to you. Another example of actual fraud under the statute, and this actually has to do with an extension of credit. It's a really hard case to read. It's from the Fifth Circuit, and this is one where you had a client that had an attorney that missed a statute of limitations on a cause of action that she wanted to prosecute on a personal injury claim. So then she hires another attorney to file a malpractice claim against her former attorney. Turns out her new attorney also missed that statute. And so now she's got a claim against her current attorney.